Hello and welcome to the Ranking the Albums podcast, the podcast in which I appraise classic artists by reviewing their studio albums from worst to best, from the stinkers to the sublime. This time I'm reviewing the work of Nina Simone. While an iconic artist, the High Priestess of Soul herself is not typically seen as a canonical album artist, and there are several reasons for this. She was a phenomenally talented classical pianist in her youth. She applied for a scholarship at the prestigious Curtis Institute in Philadelphia, only to be rejected at the audition stage. Simone believed the rejection was because of racism. It was a career setback, but Nina didn't stop playing. To make a living, she played jazz clubs in Atlantic City, where she sang for the first time too. With such a hugely expressive voice that ranged from a wounded coo to a fierce rasp, and a repertoire that mixed gospel with Duke Ellington tunes and great American songbook standards. She soon attracted the attention of Bethlehem Records, and by 1958 she'd had a major hit with I Loves You Porgy. But like her time playing clubs, she saw her career as a recording artist merely as a means to an end. In the 1960s, her demanding husband and manager Andy Stroud pushed her to capitalise on her initial success to become a superstar, which meant releasing 18 albums over 10 years, and that includes live albums and compilations. In fact, the bulk of Simone's discography was released during this decade. After separating with Stroud, her recording output slowed considerably. In the last 20 years of her life, she released only 2 albums. But by releasing so many albums, she wasn't able to sustain quality over the course of an entire album, for the most part. Consistency was never Simone's strong point, although perhaps that was not even her intention. With a reputation for being prickly, temperamental, and nonconformist, and with a defiant commitment to the civil rights movement, and then the Black Power movement, Simone was more interested in her music acting as a vehicle for political expressions of black power and identity. While by her side, Andy Stroud cajoled her not to go down that route for fear of alienating her white liberal audience, and her output is marked by Simone's inner conflict between rebelling against her husband to produce strident political music and then complying with his wishes for something more middle of the road. Simone once said, "It's the artist's duty to reflect the times." Truth be told, her music doesn't always marry with this mission statement, but when it did, it made for some raw, powerful music that still has relevance today. She wrote very few of her own songs, but she compensated for that by being a masterful interpreter. Listen to the original versions of I Put a Spell on You, Feeling Good, Cinnamon, and you can see how she transformed them from being merely pleasant tunes to striking standards. She made them her own. On top of Simone's 19 studio albums, she released 10 live albums. And for the purposes of this list, and for consistency with my other podcasts, I won't be counting the live albums in the main rankings, but at the end I will talk about them in more detail than you'd normally expect on this podcast. So at number 19, we have Nina's Back from 1985. And my favourite thing about this album is the album cover, which is literally a photo of Nina's back. It's great. Otherwise, this album is pretty woeful, marred by stodgy 80s synths and comical slap bass. It attempts a modern sheen that feels just completely artless and cack-handed. Moving swiftly on to number 18, Nina Simone sings Duke Ellington from 1962, another very literal title. Simone reworks the Duke songbook with a jazz-style orchestral backing. It has some unfortunate old-fashioned backing vocals that really date this album hideously and totally distract from Simone's performances and the arrangement. To its detriment, I believe this is the only Simone album with only one songwriter. Aficionados of the Duke will likely be appalled by the gloopy, ornate treatment of his compositions, and this is far from vintage Nina. At number 17, The Amazing Nina Simone from 1959. A more accurate title would be The Amazing Nina Simone Can Be Found on Other Albums. Typically, her releases between her debut and her mid-60s peak tend to be very tasteful and safe, easy listening. While her debut showed off her intricate piano playing, this time she only plays piano on 2 tracks, with orchestrations dominating the sound of the record, and that's really to its detriment. Despite the title, this album limits Nina Simone, and it is not by any means a showcase for her talents. At number 16, A Single Woman from 1993, so this is Nina's final album before her death in 2003. It should be said in the mid to late 80s, Nina's career had a major renaissance, with a song from her debut, My Baby Just Cares For Me, becoming a huge hit in Europe after it was used in a Chanel advert. A Single Woman suffers from the same problem as the amazing Nina Simone, in the sense that Nina's trying to capitalise on a newfound adult contemporary audience, which makes for some very forgettable music. I find it very stylized and safe, and it doesn't capture Nina's depth and range particularly well. In the bonus tracks, there are idiosyncratic interpretations of The Long and Winding Road and No Woman, No Cry, as well as a stinging version of Sign of the Times by Prince. She does look like a boss on the album cover, but she doesn't boss the material this time around. Number 15, Fodder on My Wings from 1982, and this is the most interesting of Nina's later albums. Simone had spent several years living almost nomadically in the 70s and 80s, including in Liberia for a period of time, and her wanderlust explains this worldly collection of songs. Unfortunately, despite the calypso-style music, the album's ruined by flat, toe-curling 80s production, which makes its layers of percussion sound brittle rather than vibrant. The near-title track Fodder on Her Wings is the most grandiose track here. Synths and fretless bass dance with Simone's classical piano and harpsichord tinkling. Also on this record you have Gilbert and Sullivan's Alone Again Naturally, various songs sung in French, and the fun diss track I Was Just a Stupid Dog to Them, which sounds like a Morrissey song title. But this album isn't as well executed as it could have been. At number 14, Let It All Out from 1966. So this is the first of her Imperial 60s phase on this list, but I find this record a bit of a hodgepodge, with no real anchor or thread that binds these songs together. For starters, three of the tracks, Mood Indigo, Love Me or Leave Me, Little Girl Blue, all feature on her debut album, Little Girl Blue, released 8 years prior to this record. With songs like the a cappella Images and the sexually charged blues of Chauffeur, Let It All Out is all jarring contrasts, and it never really hangs together. It suffers in comparison to those other mid-60s albums, which are her most cohesive sounding albums. The highlights of the record include a rootsy version of Dylan's protest song The Ballad of Hollis Brown, and the sleepy, guilt-ridden pillow talk of Don't Explain. The material on this record is perfectly listenable fare, but by regurgitating so much previously released material, I find this album a bit of a cop-out, cash-in album, to be honest. At number 13, we have Broadway Blues Ballads from 1964. The title of this one suggests it's going to be more diverse than it actually is. For the most part, the tunes are Broadway or ballads, but there's very little blues. And in fact, the bluesier tracks are the two towering highlights of this record. The opener, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, is a brooding pop masterpiece, and later a big hit for The Animals. Sea Lion Woman, with its shuffling beats, call and response backing vocals and perky flute playing, is one of her first forays into African-inspired percussion music. But these tracks are not representative of an album that, for me, uses too many syrupy backing singers and sickly orchestrations, and the Broadway material is too stylized for my taste. At number 12, we have Nina Simone and Piano from 1969, and on the face of it, an album stripped back to just Nina's voice and piano playing should be excellent. And on the stark blues of Nobody's Fault But Mine, Nina's performance is absolutely electric. On Randy Newman's I Think It's Gonna Rain Today, on which Simone subverts the lyric to I Hope It's Gonna Rain Today, it's a somber but stately ballad. And this album is atypical of her late 60s, early 70s work, in the sense that it's actually quite challenging, with some of the piano playing particularly avant-garde, and there's some harsh phrasing in the vocals. Piano ballad after piano ballad after piano ballad doesn't tend to make for the most enthralling listen either. A missed opportunity, I feel. At number 11, I've gone for Here Comes the Sun, released in 1971. Now, this album is typical of Nina's adult contemporary period. Her 13th album, it has standards like Mr. Bojangles and My Way, as well as covers of George Harrison's title track and Dylan's Just Like a Woman. And the tone of this album is quite mellow, but bittersweet. Nina's occasionally harsh register is largely absent on this record. Her voice tends to be quite breathy, with a hint of echo in the mix, which complements the lighter material. It's not the powerful, impactful Nina Simone of the mid-60s, and occasionally she sounds rather bored. Her version of My Way is comically bad, with rapid congas speeding up and undercutting the sentiment of the track. But mostly this is a well-delivered album of smooth soul and classic tunes, but it's an unspectacular affair. At number 10 we've got Baltimore, released in 1978. Now this was sort of a late 70s comeback album, although not one she had much control of. She and her producer Creed Taylor clashed repeatedly while recording. On the album's occasional reggae sound, Nina reportedly said, "What is this corny stuff?" Of the recording studio, she claimed it was a basement in Belgium where I was forced to sing songs in order to get out of there. Production-wise, it's a slick, smooth album with string-led, light funk and reggae arrangements that are sometimes very effective. But given the album's troubled genesis, Nina's lack of conviction vocally does weaken the album substantially. That said, the title track is a masterclass. A laid-back, swampy groove and swirling blaxploitation cinema-style strings. She reinvents the soft rock of Randy Newman's original into something far more dramatic. She wearily sings Baltimore, Ain't It Hard Just to Live, bleeding pure empathy for the citizens of one of America's poorest cities. The title track aside, this album never really hits its stride. It does have a fun cover of Hall & Oates' Rich Girl, which is better than expected. At number 9 we have To Love Somebody from 1969, and this record is similar to Here Comes the Sun in that Nina flirts with pop, rock and singer-songwriters, covering Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen and the Bee Gees. Her sun-kissed version of Cohen's Suzanne is a lovely revelation, the tune liberated from its enigmatic sobriety. The title track, originally by the brothers Gibb before they wore flares and trapped their testicles in vices to achieve worldwide success, was actually a hit for Nina, and it's a great tune if let down by the backing vocals. Revolution No. 1 and 2 is an answer song to Revolution by the Beatles, but musically has more in common with George Harrison's track Old Brown Shoe. Initially released as a double A-side, on the album it awkwardly transitions between the two tracks. Part 2 culminates in a day-in-the-life-style freak-out crescendo, which is about as wild as Nina's music gets. Overall, To Love Somebody's success is mainly driven by the strong song selection rather than the actual quality of the arrangements, but it's a decent album. Whereas previous albums on the list have had individual brilliant songs and overall flawed albums, the next few are on the whole good, consistent albums that don't have many amazing moments. At number 8 we've got High Priestess of Soul from 1967, which is her final record for Philips, and this album is actually not so much of a soul album but a similar big band style album to I Put a Spell on You. Like that album, the arrangements are by Hal Mooney, and they arguably overshadow Simone's performances. While I Put a Spell on You has career-defining moments, High Priestess of Soul is more a collection of good songs with elegant arrangements and, crucially, more of a folk and gospel slant to the material. This meshing of big brass arrangements and gospel choir works to great effect on I'm Going Back Home. Don't Pay Them No Mind is a shimmering opener, and I'm Gonna Leave You is driven by a salsa rhythm. There's also a light-hearted rolling take on Chuck Berry's Brown-Eyed Handsome Man. It has a couple of tracks written by Angelo Badalamenti, who later wrote the theme music for Twin Peaks. One of his co-writes is I Hold No Grudge, which sounds a bit like a rejected James Bond theme tune. The big band version of Work Song feels a little peculiar considering the hard-hitting lyrics about slavery and oppression. It's slower and consequently not as impactful as the terrific version on Forbidden Fruit. The better songs are the two tracks written and arranged by Simone herself rather than Mooney, Take Me to the Water and Come Ye. On the latter, she's backed only by minimal, clocking percussion and some chilling, spacious echo. Certainly, High Priestess of Soul is a well-made album, but it doesn't quite have the standout highlights of her very best work. At number 7, I've gone for Forbidden Fruit from 1961. This is her third studio album. It benefits from a stripped-back production that marks a break with the lounge jazz stylings that trap much of her earlier work. Her longtime guitarist Al Shachtman really shines on this record, contributing supple Django Reinhardt-style lines throughout. Highlights include Gin House Blues and the three covers of the little-known songwriter Oscar Brown Jr. These include the playful title track, which shifts from a children's novelty song style in the verse to a rousing call and response gospel shout-along in the chorus. Rags and Old Iron, the opening track, is a gritty tune, and there's also the definitive version of Work Song. I tend to favour the earthier, stripped-back Nina material, and this album has it in abundance. It has a few too many sleepy ballads for my liking, but it is a good, solid album. At number 6 we've got Silk and Soul from 1967, her 13th album, her second for RCA Records, her second with the word soul in the title, and her third album released in 1967. Nina Simone records tend to have quite descriptive titles, and this one is no different. It's a silky soul album. By far the most famous track here is I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, a bona fide civil rights anthem. The music is uplifting, hopeful and spiritual, buoyed by Simone's excellent piano and vocal. And yet the sentiment of the lyric, I wish I could break all the chains holding me, implies a knowingness, almost a fatalism about the barriers imposed by structural racism. It's a defiant, bittersweet, emotional song, and one of her best. The Turning Point starts off as a twee children's song, written from the perspective of a child who has made a new friend, but the song's twist makes it clear the song is really about racism and how it is a learned, unnatural behaviour. But these songs are fairly unrepresentative of the album. Her slinkier tunes on this record include the self-explanatory Turn Me On, and the cover of Bacharach and David's The Look of Love, which is perhaps a little too smooth. It doesn't hold a candle to the Dusty Springfield original. The brash and brassy Go to Hell is a welcome return to the style of I Put a Spell on You, while the loose rollicking drumming and rousing brass on the opener, It Bees the Way Sometimes, continues the slightly rockier style of Nina Simone Sings the Blues. Criminally not on the original album, the expanded edition includes an outstanding version of Aretha Franklin's Save Me, which is one of the funkiest moments in Nina's career. With its soul, swing, gospel and orchestral styles, I say this is a unique, very accessible Nina Simone record, and I recommend it to those who like their soul music a little lighter. At number 5, I've gone for I Put a Spell on You from 1965, Nina's 6th album and her first out-and-out pop album. And it's an album on which Hal Mooney's big band arrangements are really outstanding. The title track, almost a novelty song in its original incarnation by Screamin' Jay Hawkins, is afforded a sweeping drama by Nina with its swooping strings and her tinkling jazz piano and an outstanding tense sax solo. Feeling Good is another timeless, sassy track. Originally a much less dramatic and rather cheesy, cheery show tune written by Anthony Newley, the transformation of this track, for which Hal Mooney must take a fair amount of the credit, is incredible. The descending chord progression, the superlative brass arrangement and a timeless vocal makes it a quintessential Nina track. Otherwise you've got the delightful swing of Marriages for Old Folks, sung with gleeful defiance, which must have infuriated Simone's husband. The lyric goes, one husband, one wife, what do you got? Two people sentenced for life. And despite her taunting on this song, the atmosphere eventually turns colder for the song's fade out, which has a really chilling effect. Tomorrow Is My Turn also swings convincingly, while the somber Nemequipa, the Jack Brel tune that Scott Walker turned into If You Go Away, illustrates Simone's range with a fine tremulous vocal. There's a great attitude and a fiery edge on this album that's just vintage Nina. And while there's some true career highlights and some impressive ambition on this album, I Put a Spell on You's not quite consistent enough to be a contender for her very best. At number 4 we've got Little Girl Blue, released in 1959, her debut record. In contrast with the brash, arresting style of I Put a Spell on You, Little Girl Blue is a lot more seductive, with Simone's jazz and classical style piano dominating, especially on the opening Mood Indigo, which swings furiously with Nina absolutely bashing out some of the chords. And Nina turns standards inside out on this record. The title track incorporates Good King Wenceslas into its opening, And You'll Never Walk Alone is reworked into a shimmering, almost unrecognisable piece. The Prowling Plain Gold Ring is one of my favourites and was covered by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds for their Live Seeds album. What's so impressive about this album is its range. It was essentially Simone's setlist when she was playing downtown in Atlantic City, and the record is all the better for it, from Love Me or Leave Me's effortless swing to Central Park Blues' improvisation. At the time, the hit from this album was I Loves You Porgy, originally from Porgy and Bess, the Gershwin musical, famous for featuring Summertime and It Ain't Necessarily So. In the 50s and 60s, the civil rights movement damned it for its racist stereotyping and the characters' exaggerated dialects. However, Simone's rendering of the track exudes vulnerability and sophistication. It's a beautiful song with a tender Billie Holiday-esque vocal. My Baby Just Cares For Me has taken on a life of its own since its initial unassuming presence on this album. With its good-natured rhythm and ostensibly wholesome lyrics, it's one of the most joyful moments of Nina's discography. The piano solo, absolutely mesmerising, and musically perhaps the most jaw-dropping passage of her career. Little Girl Blue is a fantastic record. This is the best of Simone's smooth, easygoing records by far. The only thing lacking is the grit that she brings to my top three choices. At number three, I've gone for Wild as the Wind, released in 1966. Now, this one is like Let It All Out in the sense that it's a ragbag of leftover recordings made over 1964 and 65, rather than an album recorded in one chunk, as it were. With this in mind, Wild as the Wind feels incredibly cohesive. Unlike Let It All Out, the majority of the material here is first rate. The title track itself is stunning. It's a 6-minute creep that transforms Johnny Mathis' schmaltzy original into the chilling, romantic epic suggested by the lyric. It's even more affecting if you know the tempestuous nature of her marriage with Andy Stroud. David Bowie's Station to Station cover, though more ornate instrumentally, takes its cues from Simone's version. With Lilac Wine, Simone repeats the same trick, taking an unremarkable original and injecting it with gravitas, passion, and emotion. And Jeff Buckley's version from Grace takes its cues from Simone's version. Nina only submits one original on this album, The Moody Four Women, in which she presents four stark portraits of African-American women and the suffering they are subject to by a cruel society. The brilliantly bitter vocal and the way the song builds makes for a gripping listen. But this album has plenty of lighter moments too. I Love Your Loving Ways and Either Way I Lose a self-assured pop. What More Can I Say and That's All I Ask are elegant torch ballads. Breakdown and Let It All Out typifies Simone's instinct for combining edgy, gutsy vocal performances with pure pop melody. Then the following track, Why Keep On Breaking My Heart, is a fun but frivolous cha-cha track. The one thing that holds this album back is a series of somber ballads towards the end. While individually these tracks have merit, it's not amazing sequencing. Wild as the Wind, of course, you couldn't leave off, and Black is the Colour of My True Love's Hair is starkly beautiful, but If I Should Lose You genuinely feels like an outtake. But what I love about this album is Simone's willingness to be challenging even when she's playing with some of her most sympathetic arrangements. I've talked of Simone having unbelievable range, and I think this album is the one that best captures more or less all she could do vocally, instrumentally, and stylistically. At number two, I've gone for Pastel Blues from 1965, and whether or not this is an intended concept album is hard to tell, but there's a history of the blues feel to this LP, as shown by the different kinds of blues and gospel tracks Simone recorded for it. Be My Husband was written by Simone's husband, with its raw scatting, a whip-like hi-hat, hand claps and stomps. It's an eerie sounding opening track, with an uncomfortable lyric considering Andy Stroud was hideously violent towards Nina. The blues standard Nobody Knows When You're Down and Out is, despite its title, almost jubilant and builds to an expert crescendo. End of the Line starts with a classical, well-enunciated opening and has an outro that staggers away ominously. Tell Me More and More and Then Some, with its cowboy harmonica, swaggers with drowsy lustfulness. Trouble in Mind and Chilly Winds Don't Blow are airy, relatively jaunty affairs, in themselves not outstanding songs, but cleverly placed in the track listing to mitigate the impact of the somber material elsewhere. But Simone saves the best until last. Her version of Strange Fruit trumps Billie Holiday's for sheer bitterness and despondency. Finally, the 10-minute spiritual closer, Cinnamon, is one of the most epic moments Simone committed to tape. With its galloping rhythm and preacher-like call-and-response vocals, I particularly love the syncopated percussion and the piano breakdowns midway through the track. Pastel Blues is an austere and austerely produced album, combining blues, jazz, classical and gospel. It's an album of just as much ambition as I Put a Spell on You, and only bettered by another Nina Simone blues album. Released in 1967, it's my number one, Nina Simone Sings the Blues. Now, there are definitely better individual songs than many of Nina's albums, but this is her most consistent record, and part of the appeal is the looser band arrangements. This was the first album of hers released by RCA Records after leaving Philips, and you can tell the arrangements are just a lot less highly strung, which makes the album sound much more contemporary and organic. Do I Move You kicks it off with a late night dive bar groove and a frighteningly delivered lyric, Do I Move You? The answer better be yes. On that song and Day and Night, there's such a tight-knit interplay between taut guitar lines, rambling drums and wailing harmonica. My favourite tracks include Nina's take on The House of the Rising Sun, with its pounding three-note piano riff and its unstoppable freight train rhythm. Backlash Blues, an original co-written with the poet Langston Hughes, is pointedly political and confrontational, with stinging lyrics like, So Mr. Backlash, who do you think I am? You raise my taxes, freeze my wages, send my son to Vietnam. You give me second-class houses and second-class schools. Do you think that all coloured folks are just second-class fools? Mr. Backlash, I'm gonna leave you with the blues. Contrastingly, there's I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. Originally a bawdy Bessie Smith blues, it's rendered sweet, sultry, longing and intimate by Simone. In fact, there's only one sombre ballad, My Man's Gone Now, originally from Porgy and Bess, which is initially sparse and then explosive. While Pastel Blues presents the blues in its darkest form, sometimes to an almost oppressive extent, Sings the Blues is a crowd-pleasing evening-time jazzy blues album. It's simply produced with exceptional band performances and some of Nina's finest vocals. It may not contain her very best individual songs, but it is her finest collection of songs and hence her strongest album. Now, usually I tend to skim over the live album section of the podcast, but I feel in Nina Simone's case it's important to say her live performances were something else. She was an intense and intimidating presence on the stage, and because of her classical training she saw performances as concerts, in the classical sense of the word, and would wait until the audience had dropped to an absolute still silence before starting a song. That presence is most vividly captured on 1964's Nina Simone in Concert, her first album for Philips, and a true turning point in her career. It has the humorous Go Limp and the captivating Pirate Jenny, and Mississippi Goddamn. The latter is a show tune come civil rights anthem where she jibes her white audience into stilted, uncomfortable laughter. It's undoubtedly a career highlight. Nina Simone in Concert would be in my top 5, possibly even the top 3 albums, had I been ranking it among the studio albums. Other live albums include Folksy Nina, which was released in 64 as well, but recorded in 63, which sees her taking on Israeli folk music. Nuff Said was released in 68. It contains the emotional Why the King of Love is Dead, written mere days after the assassination of Martin Luther King. There's the hit single Ain't Got No, I Got Life, a very 60s rejection of materialism that in the noughties was used in an advert for Müller yogurt. Black Gold, released in 1970, represents the height of Nina's Black Power phase, containing a 9-minute version of her anthem To Be Young, Gifted and Black, which was released as a standalone single in 1969. Emergency Ward from 1972 was her biggest statement against the Vietnam War and features 2 George Harrison covers among its 3 tracks. Her 18-minute take on My Sweet Lord is an absolute tour de force. Finally, It Is Finished is my second favourite Simone live album, and the album sees her properly embrace world music. The standout is funkier than a mosquito's tweeter with its hypnotic percussion and savage vocals. Moving on now to compilations. Well, for my money, there isn't a single satisfying Nina Simone compilation, which is partly down to her recording on so many record labels, so you may find a strong compilation covering her time on Philips or RCA Records, but of course that's an incomplete story. I find it problematic that the best compilation is arguably 2006's The Very Best of Nina Simone, which compiles her best-known popular songs across her career. And you can't argue with Feeling Good, I Put a Spell on You, I Loves You Porgy, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, etc. But the whole thing feels like a revisionist exercise. None of her explicitly political songs are here, so songs like Mississippi Goddamn, Baltimore, and nor is Wild as the Wind. When tracks like The Times They Are A-Changin' or Mr. Bojangles are included instead, it underscores how Nina isn't taken seriously enough as an artist in her own right. This lack of seriousness and respect manifests in other ways too. A silhouette of a black woman features on the album cover, and another compilation from around the same time, Gold, features an illustration of a cat. Even on her original albums, predominantly you have actual photos of Nina Simone on the cover, so ultimately the compilation feels like a cynical and frankly racist attempt to soften Nina Simone's edges, to present a safe version of her to a contemporary, mainly white audience. And I don't think that is how Nina Simone should be perceived. She was a daring, steely artist, a black woman who persevered against her disadvantages to produce work showcasing astounding talent, power and sophistication. The top five albums in my rankings all demonstrate this, as does Nina Simone in concert. Not typically perceived as an in quotes album artist, Nina Simone's discography is inconsistent and hugely eclectic, but one of a truly idiosyncratic genius. That's all for this time. Thank you very much for listening.